Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Thursday afternoon, March 13th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. While an inheritance can provide a big boost to your retirement plan, it may not be wise to count on it too much. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, today's inflation data eased some concerns while jobless claims remain steady. However, the potential employment impact of government spending cuts loom. We're joined by Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And let's take this one step at a time because it may be easier to digest. Beginning with the producer price index, the wholesale prices, generally a leading indicator of inflationary pressures that exist inside the pipeline. And just going on the February numbers alone, Paul, those inflationary pressures are non-existent.
Well, yeah, that's right. Hi, Rob. The overall measure of producer price index for the year was very weak. But, again, you have to open the hood and look underneath and see what's going on. And a lot of that is due, most of that is due to a big decline in gasoline prices, which has a very big weight in everybody's budget and in the producer price index as well. If you look at some of the other measures, excluding food and excluding that gasoline and energy generally, you get an increase that was the most in 2 years. So what we're seeing, I would sort of net it all out by saying what we're really seeing is firm inflation, sticky inflation, but it's not really surging yet.
Now, the consumer price index came out yesterday, and now that you have access to the CPI and the PPI, you could probably do some back-of-the-napkin math to get a good idea of what the PCE, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, what that figure is going to be later in the month.
Yeah, so the Fed's measure is the personal consumption expenditures. It's a little bit different size basket than the consumer price index, but it's the one the Fed decides to use. And just judging from what we've seen the last couple of days in inflation data, the PCE is probably going to come in somewhere between 2.5% and 3%. That's probably not enough to warrant another rate cut, but it's not a warning sign. It's not a red flag either.
And then we also have just the ongoing drama regarding tariffs and government job cuts. Even though it's not showing up in the numbers just yet, how does this complicate things for analysts going forward, either on the tariff front or the government job cut front and the economic impact of fewer people spending money?
Yeah, so let's take the DOGE piece of it first. We are going to see some more layoffs at the federal level. We've seen about 75,000 people sign up for the early retirement. Not everyone gets that option. All told, you're going to see something upwards of maybe 200,000 people out on the street. But history can help provide some useful perspective. There have been two other in the last several decades, two other episodes where the federal government let go a large number of workers, over 300,000. In 1994-97, that was President Clinton. And then again in 2011 into 2014, that was President Obama. And if you look at those numbers, it shows that about 50% of those people found private sector employment pretty quickly, and the remaining 50% were kind of evenly divided between early retirement versus going to find jobs at the state and local level or some other job in the federal bureaucracy. So we're not too concerned that those people will be out of jobs for very long. We don't think that's going to have a material impact on the economy. Remember, the economy creates 160,000 jobs a month. So in 2 months, you would have enough jobs to fill for all of those people. In principle.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Coming up, why an inheritance may not be a great strategy to fund your retirement. We'll talk about that next.
WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Those who count on a big inheritance as their long-term financial plan should be wary. Things often don't play out as expected, and most people never receive one. We welcome in Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park and author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And in your experience, how many people have you come across who really are betting the farm or betting their retirement on some well-to-do relative, whether it be a parent or an uncle, buying the farm, as it were, and then passing a substantial inheritance on to them?
You know, those are typically not my clients. Even if they stand to inherit quite a bit of money, most of them do not count on it, which I think is a healthy way to look at your finances and what's possible for you. Now, granted, the closer you get to it and you actually inherit it, it's a beautiful thing. But, you know, if you can make it without that, you're just more financially secure.
And also, I mean, the idea of you getting a windfall when some person in your life shuffles off this mortal coil, outside of just being a rather just kind of morbid way to approach your own future, people live longer these days. And because they live longer, their expenses extend over a longer time horizon, and that could cut into your potential nest egg.
Well, absolutely, Rob. So the person that you're hoping to inherit from may end up spending all that money on their own support, right? You never know what kind of long-term care situation they'll run into. So it's best not to count on it. Of course, if you receive it, it's a beautiful thing.
And then in general, when a family inheritance is, let's say the person, you know, the person who dies, the decedent, does have, you know, they have a will, they have everything spelled out, and the estate is divvied up amongst various relatives. If you think you're getting a big windfall of money, the procedure makes that less of an eye-popping amount.
Well, sometimes. And again, it depends on the amount of the inheritance and how many people are inheriting. It also depends on what is the taxation of those assets you are inheriting. Are you inheriting something that has a lot of tax consequence, you know, IRAs and whatnot, which requires you to spend those down in 10 years? So you really have to do some planning around that. So it just really depends on how much and what kind of asset.
So in other words, don't depend on an inheritance. I mean, continue saving and funding your own retirement. And if you just happen to be in a situation where a well-to-do relative leaves you with a substantial amount of money after they pass away, it's just it's a nice to have. Don't make it a need to have.
Yeah. I mean, I have a client that inherited quite a bit of money at a very young age, and they are struggling not only with the sadness, but how to really get their life pulled together because of how much they inherited. So it could be a double-edged sword. We're trying to help them walk through getting their land legs so that they can stand up once the inheritance is exhausted in that 10-year period of time.
Now let's pull out, because I think we talk about a large inheritance as a personal finance situation, and it is if you are going to benefit from it. But we are, you know, just looking demographically, we are at a point in time where there is a massive transfer of wealth taking place as baby boomers begin to walk off the 18th green of life, Chris, and they bequeath their estates to their children who are millennials or even younger than that. And how is that going to change people's retirement plans? How is that going to change people's personal financial situations as these trillions of dollars flow from one generation to a younger generation?
Sure. Well, we have to take it into account. So like I said, I don't want clients to count on that money, but we're not silly. We do plug in some amount of inheritance just so that we could see the impact with and without that. And again, what kind of asset is it? Is it going to be a tax-free asset? Maybe they're going to inherit a bunch of real estate or brokerage accounts, or are they going to inherit a cancer-infested, tax-infested IRA? So it just really depends on how much and what kind of asset. And then two, what have you done to protect yourself personally, let alone the windfall that could come your way?
Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, President Trump's trade war is causing some major concern in the alcohol industry.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
As trade tensions rise, alcohol retailers are strategically planning, stockpiling some imports, and shifting focus to domestic alternatives to brace for potential price shocks. We welcome in Carly Katz, owner of Bottles and Cans, two locations in Chicago, to give us some insight on how things are playing out at the local level. Carly, you know, every day on this show now, we're talking about the threat of tariffs on certain products, tariffs being implemented, tariffs being pulled back. It's enough to make you want to pour yourself a stiff drink, Carly, but you may want to make sure it's it comes from an American distiller.
Well, that's going to be the theme for a little bit, is that idea of kind of just doubling down on domestic, which, you know, pros and cons to everything. But I'm glad you guys are like opening up everybody's eyes to this issue. It's just kind of for small businesses. It's been one thing after the other for the last couple of years, and now we're fighting tariffs.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of rhetoric, Carly, and you have tariffs that are implemented then pulled back, but of course you have budgets and you have to spend the amount budgeted on your products, and whether it's aluminum tariffs or tariffs being imposed on American alcohol going out or European alcohol coming into your store, how do you make a business plan with all of this stuff just swirling around?
It's difficult. You know, again, you're right on the back and forth that everything is happening. For us, we've been trying to do where in anticipation buying habit, where we are kind of bringing in more than we normally would of certain items coming in from other places that the tariffs are going to interact with, and having those where we can still kind of try and maintain what we have it for on our shelves. But at the end of the day, there's only, you can't spend the same dollar twice. So at the end of the day, there's only so much that we can do in that moment. And eventually, if this kind of keeps going this direction, it's the consumer that's going to have to start making the really hard choices. Because as small businesses, we're the ones that kind of get in a worse position sooner than, you know, your big box stores. But we also can appreciate the fact that people are also trying to guard their wallets a little differently than they normally would. And it's just, it's pivoting. It's trying to come up with a budget that makes sense with the unknown.
Now we have St. Patrick's Day coming up on next week. Now, does this mean you can see a higher price on that bottle of Tullamore Dew that you want to get before the holiday? I mean, when assuming the tariffs are put into place, when do they start showing up? When do they start affecting you, and when do they start affecting the customer?
It kind of depends on how the distribution works. Smaller distributors, it'll take a little longer for that to hit to hit the consumer. But some of these bigger companies, you know, the Brown-Formans of the world, the you know, just the larger entities in general, we'll probably start seeing those in the next couple of weeks if everything stays, you know, the way that we're being told it's going to stay in the next couple of weeks, you know, that those spring drinking items, you'll likely see a little bit of an uptick.
Carly Katz, owner of Bottles and Cans, two locations in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Still ahead on Technology Thursday, a look at the gadgets and gizmos that are hot this spring.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Massive White House jobs cuts are overturned in federal court. The latest next in a special report from CBS News. A child survives a frightening fall from a building on Chicago's South Side. In Technology Thursday, we'll check in with an expert for a look at the latest tech gadgets. And the Chicago area sees a reversal of a trend towards falling population. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 563 points, the NASDAQ is down 364, and the S&P 500 is down 81. AccuWeather says for today, sunny, turning milder, a high today of 60. We have 58 degrees right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies at 1231.
CBS News special report. A federal judge in California has ordered six federal agencies to offer to reinstate probationary employees who were fired last month. A group of unions challenged the firings. The judge said neither the Office of Personnel Management nor its acting director had the authority to direct the firings across federal agencies. CBS's Stacey Lynn.
The federal judge found the firings didn't follow federal law and required the administration to send immediate offers of reinstatement. Statement.
His order could cover the Departments of Veterans Affairs, Agriculture, Defense, Energy, Interior, and Treasury. More than 20 states, meanwhile, are suing the administration over mass layoffs at the Education Department. California Attorney General Rob Bonta.
The Trump administration's directive to shut down the Department of Education through a massive reduction in force is unlawful and cannot stand.
The Education Department is cutting in half its staff. CBS News Special Report, I'm Cammie McCormick.
It's 12:32. An investigation is underway after a four-year-old girl fell from the 10th floor of a building on the city's south side this week. The incident happened a little bit before 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning at 45th and Drexel Boulevard in the Bronzeville neighborhood. The child suffered a head injury and was taken to a hospital in fair condition. The noon business hour continues. Markets are trading sharply lower once again. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. And once again this week, we are talking about sell-offs in the three major indices in the 1 or 2% range. When does this end?
Wow, what an easy question to start with, Rob. Thanks for having me back. I will start with good news. I think last time we talked, it was like record lows in Chicago. Now you're talking 60s. So we'll start with the good news. You know, as probably most listeners know, every day we seem to come in and there's different tariff issues, right? The market can go up on uncertainty. I'm sorry, the market can go up on good news. It can go up even on bad news. It doesn't like uncertainty, and that's unfortunately what we're dealing with right now. Now, one more quick thing about them. Some context around this. The S&P was up over 20% 2 years in a row. Historically, the first quarter of a post-election year, where we are now, tends to be kind of choppy as you kind of get used to that new president, new policies. That sound familiar? The first quarter after 20% gain tends to be a little choppy. The last 20 years, the first quarter has been like the worst quarter on average. So we expected some volatility, and honestly, we're almost in a correction, meaning down 10% from the previous peak of February 19th. You know, but most years on average do have one 10% correction. I mean, they all have to have them. We haven't had a 10% correction, Rob, last comment, since late 2023. You know, we were due for some volatility, and my oh my, is it happening?
And also, and we made this point yesterday, and that is to put it into perspective, even with the sell-off that has been going on, we're still up compared to this time last year. So we're not talking about, 2008 or 1987 or 1929. We're just talking about the fall of last year.
Well, exactly. That's well said there. Here's another way listeners can put it. We had the great financial crisis, right, 16 years ago right now. The last 16 years, the S&P is up, ready for this, on a total return basis, 1,000%. That's including this recent weakness, okay? So, and I get it. We're talking about what's going on right now, this year. But I think for the longer-term investors, just remember, 2 years ago right now, we were talking about a regional bank crisis. Everyone was very worried. 5 years ago right now, we're talking about what? COVID shut the economy down, 34% bear market. 16 years ago, stock market cut in half, great financial crisis. For whatever reason, March tends to have these wild moves sometimes. We've gotten through them all. We're going to get through this. We're maybe not there yet, but we're optimistic we're going to get through this year sooner than later.
And a lot of this just seems like reacting to the daily daily torrent of tariff announcements, the threat of tariffs, then they're implemented, then they're pulled back. At what point, though, does Wall Street just tune all of this out?
Yeah, that's a great one there, too. I mean, we are obviously every day the news moves things. What the market, I think, is dealing with right now is what people are calling it a growth scare. We think we're kind of reevaluating growth. I mean, honestly, if some of these tariffs come into play, earnings aren't going to be as strong as they once were, right? Because tariffs can be a little inflationary. They can hurt the consumer a little bit. We don't think it's going to come to a screeching halt, this economy. We still don't see a recession. But that's what we're dealing with. Now, honestly, we do need more resolution, right? We need some type of resolution, and that's where we are. Now, we have had some good news. Let's talk about some positives. I mean, the last 2 days, we've had some pretty solid inflation data, right? Inflation continues to not really be a problem. This morning, initial jobless claims came in lower than expected. So I know about the layoffs, the different things people are talking about. We're not quite seeing that in the economic data just yet. So there are still more positives and negatives, but we're just not through this. Just one bit of good news again for the listeners. April's right around the corner. April, historically, is like the best month the last 20 years. So maybe once we get through a little rocky March, we'll still have a little spring bounce. I think it's quite possible.
And then another piece of data that came out earlier this week was the number of job openings, which remains solid. One job for every unemployed person.
No, that's exactly right. An easy way to put this. Look at how many people are getting laid off in that data and how many people are quitting. Honestly, there's not a lot of movement. I mean, people aren't quitting. Usually if you're quitting, that means maybe you have a better opportunity or somewhere else. We're not quite seeing that, but we're not seeing layoffs either. So the economy has been growing for a couple years now. It's slowing, yes, but the labor market, I'd still give it like a solid B. It's not an A, it's not an A+, but the labor market's still pretty solid, Rob, and that drives the economy as consumers spend. Last comment, when you look at that data also, we've seen solid wage growth. You know, wages are still solid. And like we talked about, inflation is not spiking. Even eggs. I mean, everybody talk about eggs. Eggs are down significantly, like, in the past week or two. So we've seen a big break in eggs as well. So, hey, again, we're trying to bring some good news in a pretty scary time. Just know, everyone, we don't see a recession. It's still a bull market. We still have record earnings. We probably were due for some volatility. And my, oh, my, again, we're getting it. Welcome to March Madness.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, the coolest gadgets as the weather warms up.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and today we're taking a look at must-have gadgets for spring. Let's check in with Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder, editor-in-chief of Techish.com, based in San Francisco. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. And it's a great weather day in Chicago, Jennifer, the kind of day that makes you think about spring. Temperatures upper 50s, low 60s today. We could see the 70s tomorrow, maybe even some showers and thunderstorms in the forecast. So I think everybody's in the spring frame of mind. And we're going to talk about some spring gadgets today. And the first one, and this is my favorite one of all of them, and this is the robotic shoes that make you walk faster.
You know, I was just thinking about how awesome it would be to walk to work. You can walk along the lake, you know, and do that walk 7 times faster than normal on the Shift Robotics Moonwalkers Aero AI-informed shoes. I mean, you just strap them on. They Velcro right onto the regular shoes that you're wearing. You walk heel to toe, heel to toe. They go up to 7 miles an hour, about 1.5 hours of walk time in them, and it's really cool. It's not skates. It's not, you know, one of those things you press a button and you just kind of coast along. It's like these really interesting onboard regenerative speed and brakes and all of that. Like, to slow down, you just slow down. To stop, you just stop. It's very similar to like how electric vehicles work. Very cool.
Now, at the risk of sounding like a Luddite, 7 miles an hour is faster than most joggers. I can see, and there's no real like instruction manual, so I could see myself putting these shoes on, racing along at 7 miles an hour down Randolph, and then just screaming, "Jane, get me off this crazy thing."
It's very similar to being on one of those like moving sidewalks in an airport. It is very similar to that. I love the Jetson reference there. But the idea behind it, there's a deeper purpose here, because a set of these will cost you a mere, you know, $1,200. Like, these aren't roller skates, you know. The bigger purpose here is to help factory and warehouse workers, there's about 6 million of them in America today, boost productivity with less effort. So it's a splurge item, but yeah, you definitely want to try them out.
Now, the next cool spring gadget, this is a TV that makes your rumpus room or your living room look like the lair of a James Bond villain.
It's a 4K 77-inch. This is LG's signature OLED see-through television. We first talked about this when they announced it at CES 2024. Now it's on the market. It's a giant see-through TV. A screen rises in the back when you want to make it not transparent, make it just an awesome television. And yeah, it sparks TV envy throughout the planet, but that'll cost you $60,000.
Oh, that's just a drop in the bucket. I mean, I've got, listen, Jennifer, I've got AI sneakers money. So yeah, $60,000 for the translucent TV. That's doable. And then speaking of things that change color, translucent surfaces, we have some sunglasses. They are aura color changing sunglasses. Is this based on a patented mood ring technology?
This is by Camilo, like chameleon. The Aura color-changing sunglasses,
They're the world's first sunglasses that you can tap up at your temple and they change color, light, medium, dark, darker, about four different shades. And according to the company, they're scientifically designed to influence emotions and enhance well-being. I don't know about that part, but I get compliments everywhere I go with them. And then when I show off the Magic Touch lenses, I get like all these like, where do I buy those? It was one of Time's best inventions of the year. And if you think about like transition lenses, they normally take about 30 seconds to get darker outside and up to like 3 minutes to lighten up inside. These just take a tap of your finger. But again, all this awesome is expensive. They're $385.
And then the last one, this is just, it's a robot that cools your drink. So you no longer have to blow onto a beverage and, you know, shoot yeah. millions of germs onto that cup of coffee. A robot will do it for you and in a far more sanitary way.
It's the Necogita Fufu. It hooks onto the side of your mug. It looks like a tiny little cat with a mouth that's shaped like a circle, and its sole purpose in life is to blow on your hot soup or your hot coffee, your hot tea. There's an internal fan that uses a special algorithm that supports up to 8 blowing speeds. I look at this and I say, it is stupid enough that I have to have it. $25 comes out later this year.
Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder, editor-in-chief of Techish.com in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us today.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The latest Census Bureau data shows an increase in the population of the Chicago metro area that includes the city and Cook County. Let's take a closer look with John Pletz, senior reporter, Crane Chicago Business. John, thank you for joining us today. And this is, at first glance, encouraging news, especially after all of that disruption during the pandemic years when a lot of people moved out of the city to take advantage of remote working opportunities.
Yeah, it's been a while since the Chicago area or the state have been able to show growth. Both of them are growing again, according to the census numbers. We'll know here in a couple months whether that was also true for the city.
The 12-county metro area adding 70,762 residents between July 1st of 2023 and July 1st of 2024. That is a increase of nearly one percentage point. 9.4 million people now live in the Chicago metro area. And how much of that can be attributed to the migrants who were either being bused here or moved to the Chicago area while they were waiting for their asylum hearing?
It's not clear. We do know that international immigration was the big source of growth, but we don't know exactly how much of that is from the migrants, whether it was, migrants being bused here from Venezuela, or there were a lot of migrants that came after Ukraine was invaded. So we don't really know. What we do know is that a number of other cities, particularly New York, saw similar increases.
At the same time, though, I mean, you're seeing other stories about how there really is kind of an apartment crunch in downtown Chicago. Other signs that people are definitely moving back, and that the apartment market, at the very least, is a heck of a lot more robust than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, part of that is I think the challenge in the single family housing market, people buying homes. But there's no doubt that fewer people are leaving. So, the numbers told us that it wasn't just international immigration. And international immigration has long been the thing that helps places like Chicago and New York make up for people who leave for other areas. That trend hasn't changed. But what was encouraging in these numbers was that the rate of out-migration or people leaving for other cities, other parts of the country, has also slowed in the last year or so. And that has really been a nagging problem for Chicago and for the state.
And then very quickly, John, especially when it comes to the out migration, I think it seems like there were a lot of different factors, starting with a lot of people who are probably finally taking advantage of long delayed retirement plans. You know, they wanted to retire and then the Great Recession happened, or it was just a lot of movement inside the labor market and people left in search of other opportunities elsewhere during that Great Resignation period.
Yeah, that's tightening up for sure. You've got a return to office as well. There's sort of less availability or less tolerance for, you know, long distance remote work. And so I think, you know, what you mentioned earlier is that that's also a factor as, you know, we get further from COVID. You know, one of the things from the pandemic was it allowed and you know, encouraged a lot of people to leave large cities like Chicago. That's probably slowing down.
John Pletz, senior reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Thank you for joining us today.